This program contains explicit content and subject matter which may be unsuitable for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Sex Out Loud is sponsored by Lilo, award-winning designers of the world's best pleasure objects.
Smart. Sexy. Kinky. Fun.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud with your host, sex educator, author, and filmmaker, Tristan Taramino. It's sex-positive radio like you've never heard before. Tristan talks about sexuality from every angle with leading authors, experts, artists, and icons. From sex education and sexual politics to BDSM and non-monogamy, nothing is off limits. So get ready to open your mind and expand your horizons. This is Sex Out Loud. And now here's your host, Tristan Taramino.
One of the questions I, of course, get all the time is, well, what is erotic humiliation? Like, what does that mean? Right? And the basis of erotic humiliation is this. You take something that is traditionally negative, something that causes humiliation or shame. The definition of humiliation is to lower one's status in one's own eyes or others' eyes, right? So the whole idea of being humiliated is truly about being lowered and about being put down within society's kind of taboos and expectations, right? But then it makes you horny. Right? And so you've got this really, really particularly complicated dynamic where you are experiencing these things that society tells you are negative and that are bad and that make you feel bad, and then but you want them and they turn you on, or you want to do them to somebody else and it turns you on to do them to somebody else, right? So that very dichotomy, I think, makes it a bit more complicated than even a lot of other kinky stuff.
That was a clip from Princess Callie's Erotic Humiliation Workshop, which I had the pleasure of attending. Let me tell you a little bit more about her. Princess Callie takes her kink seriously and has spent over 14 years exploring not only the how, but the why of alternative lifestyles. Her experience working as a professional dominatrix has given her a unique understanding of the motivations behind erotic humiliation play, as well as a passion for helping people participate in it more safely and enjoyably. As the founder of erotication.com, she is a pioneer of the kinktrepreneur business model, creating sites such as Kink Academy, Passionate You, and Fearless Press for easy access to adult sex and BDSM education. Her work continues to inspire and support many other kink educators, writers, and enthusiasts. And she has a new book out called Enough to Make You Blush. Let's listen to the interview.
Welcome to Sex Out Loud, Callie.
Thanks so much for having me, Tristan. Super excited.
So we're here at 2016 International Ms. Leather and Ms. Bootblack Contest and Celebration Weekend.
That's right.
And I had the pleasure of going to your class yesterday.
I was so excited for you to come. Thank you for making the time to come.
Okay, so you have this class on erotic humiliation, and I actually learned a lot.
That means a lot to me.
And I feel like, well, let me start out by saying that I feel like I can explain BDSM to practically anyone.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Yeah.
And just get them to understand what it is.
Yes.
And to get away from these ideas of like the beating.
The stereotypes.
And the pain. And the meanness, right?
Yeah.
And so it's like, I feel like I can get them to talk about bondage or understand why someone might be into bondage, right?
I see where you're going.
And then
with
a whole
this.
Other bunch yes. of things. But then I say, you know, oh, that particular person, they're into humiliation. And then
and
it's like
right over
they
head.
Shut down
yeah.
and they're like,
no,
that's not okay.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No, that's not okay.
Yeah.
And I think even within our own
community,
it's taboo.
People that do really hardcore bondage and impact play often have a complete mental block on what they think humiliation play is and the type, quote unquote, the type of person who does humiliation play.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the things that I thought was really helpful were these brainstorms you did with the audience. You asked them specific questions, and I wanted to go through some of those brainstorms, which I felt like were really helpful.
Yeah.
Which was just like, what do you associate with humiliation?
Yeah.
What were some of the things people said?
You know, the I like to do stereotypes. You know, what are stereotypes that you've experienced or you've seen or heard in the kink community? And a lot of times people will talk about that misunderstanding of the level of cruelty. Mm-hmm. The assumption of being a damaged person persists, again, even within the kink community.
So if you desire to be humiliated
or to humiliate others,
because
both of those sides of that coin, people struggle with. Mm-hmm. Because often the question is, why would you let someone do this to you? But of course, that's the crux of the question about any of this weird, kinky, amazing shit that we do. It's right. Like, why would you let somebody tie you up and hang you with your three best friends from a tree? Because it's entertaining and because it fulfills some kind of need in you. Right. And so then I also talk a lot about, what do people get out of this?
Yes.
Because I often find that even people into humiliation struggle with defining what they get out of it. Why do we want it? We don't, even within the kink community, don't always have language. Right. So a lot of times submissives will talk about being seen and being the center of attention, that even if it's, you know, kind of bad attention, it's still attention. I did a survey, I think I mentioned when you were in there, mm-hmm. and one of the questions I asked was, do you think that confidence is related to this? Because a lot of submissives talk about the need for balance, that generally they are a very confident, sometimes even arrogant person in their daily life. And so they simply are seeking a psychological balanced experience where then maybe they get to be a little lower.
Taken down a notch.
Exactly. But done in a safe, healthy, affectionate, consensual way, instead of, you know, maybe pursuing those things more unconsciously.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I was just surprised at some of the things people came up with, because like, some people said, you know, being humiliated makes me feel helpless.
Yeah.
And then the next person would say, being humiliated makes me feel
empowered.
Strong.
Yes.
Because I got through it.
Yes.
And I didn't break.
Yeah. It is such a truly personal thing. I mean, it is, you know, I think that all kink, you know, we focus so much on the physical manifestations of kink, but everybody has kind of a different mindset they're trying to achieve. Mm-hmm. You know, we all are unique human beings, even if there's threads of common experiences. You know, so often when somebody says, I'm into humiliation, that doesn't really give you all that much information, because not knowing, you know, are they trying to feel helpless or are they trying to feel strong? Those are two things that can be achieved through humiliation play, but only if you know what you're trying to get towards.
Right. And only if you know a certain amount about
the person,
your partner. You stressed in the workshop, I don't think this is casual play.
Yeah.
You know, meet someone at a party and let's do humiliation. Because, well, there's risk.
Yeah.
There's real risk. Things can go wrong. Things can go wrong in any scene.
Course.
But I think in psychological scenes, like, you have to know that. And I think that there's, like, you really stressed that it was, like, specific to the person. That what humiliates person A, person B has no shame about, no
yes.
guilt, no weirdo feelings about,
so
right?
So if you're trying to throw, you know, this thing at them, trying to get them to be humiliated, and it's not being successful, you're both going to feel frustrated. And I think then what often happens is people say, oh gosh, I don't like humiliation play. No, you just don't like, you know, non-personalized mm-hmm. humiliation play that doesn't have the kind of intimate nuance that happens when you actually gear it towards a particular person, instead of just being, oh, I'm going to call you names loudly and expect you to be humiliated. That
yeah.
that's just sets yourself up for
yeah.
failure, which I think it makes my pervert heart sad, I always say, you know? It's like, we want you guys to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So get to know the buttons and focus in on a few buttons
mm-hmm.
and play with those things.
One of my first exposures way back in the day at Black Rose. Hey,
oh,
shout
yeah,
out to Black
totally.
Rose!
That was one of my first events.
Erotic humiliation was, I was teaching a class on anal play 101,
uh-huh.
which is like, you know, I teach the class all
right.
the time. And a DS couple came in. The cis guy was the master and the woman was a submissive. And she sat at his feet in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed, like, sort of throughout the class that she was fidgety. She was blushing, a very sort of deep, deep blush. And I thought, well, maybe she's just flushed, you know. And what I found out later was that was a humiliation scene.
Just simply being there.
She is so freaked out.
Yes.
And feels so much like shame and embarrassment around anal sex.
Yes.
That going to a class, having other people see her at that class.
Yes.
And having someone talk about anal sex for an hour and a half.
And being right there up front.
Right up front. Made to sit up front. Made to pay attention. Mortified.
Yes.
Mortified.
Yes. And I'm sure experiencing that literally from the top to the bottom of the class.
Yes.
When, of course, how many other people are sitting in the class just soaking it up?
Taking notes, exactly. Asking questions.
Right,
yeah.
And that's the thing. You know, in my book, I not only use 15 years of my personal experience, but from this survey, I quote 60 other kinksters. Because humiliation is so personal, I wanted to make sure that I wasn't just presenting my version of it. And one of my favorite quotes is, I think it was from a guy named Mr. Ogre, and he said, you know, making somebody eat a bowl of cereal and watch American Idol can be humiliating if you know what you're doing. And it's like, ding, 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 ding. Because
yes.
If those hit your particular psychological buttons, then that's the only qualifier for a successful humiliation scene.
Right.
Not, am I doing humiliation right?
Because that's not really a thing.
Because that's not a thing. Like, I inevitably in my classes, I end up with somebody that raises their hand and says, you know, I've been told that this thing that I find humiliating isn't humiliating. Or I've been told that this thing that I don't find humiliating is humiliating. Can you tell me who's right? I'm like, whoever is saying how they feel is right. Right? Like the person, for instance, I taught in Australia a couple years ago, and this woman, she said, you know, I love to kiss my master's feet. I kiss her feet, and I am transported into a submissive, devoted headset.
Right.
And a woman friend of mine keeps saying to me, no, that's a humiliating gesture. And she's like, I am so confused.
Well, first of all, in a dominant submissive dynamic, it's what you've imbued. It's the meaning
exactly.
You have given
it's
to the ritual. Yes. And so is it a sign of devotion and also of intimacy?
Makes yes. Very intimacy. Oh, definitely.
Or is someone else saying, if you kiss my feet, you're lower than the ground.
Than I am. Right.
Right.
And one of my big sayings is intention, not activity. People, I think, in the kink community get so focused on activity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing this activity, and so it means this.
Right.
Right. And for me, that is such absolute bullshit. If I'm a dominant and I'm getting spanked, does that make me less of a dominant? Of course not. Right.
No,
right. You're
right.
The look,
okay.
The immediate look on your face, Tristan, right. Is of course not. But I am shocked at how many dominants feel restricted by that. Right. But it's the intention, not the activity. For me, crawling is a great example. I was a stripper for a couple of years before I was a dominatrix. Love stripping, found it so empowering. And I would crawl towards, you know, towards somebody giving a show. And there was not a shred of submission. I was a predator. You know, I like absolutely, you know, you lock in that eyes, you do those eye fucking, you do the spanky.
Okay, you can't see her, but she's doing this crawling motion and she's giving me these like eyes. You can't see it, but it's kind of intense.
It is, right? And it's, but it's powerful. But then of course, if I make a submissive crawl and I say, you're nothing but a worm down there crawling at my feet, wriggling on the floor, it's the intention of it. It's not the action itself.
Right.
And I think that particularly when it comes to humiliation, that's a really important thing for people to remember. If you set the intention, the activity will follow.
But it also means you have to sort of dig around in maybe some dark areas.
It takes some work.
Right.
Yeah. It's one of the reasons I love it so much, because the reward matches the effort.
Right.
If you put effort into getting to know somebody, and if you put effort into really bending your creativity towards a mind fuck that is geared towards a particular brain, for me, that is my core kink. That there is nothing finer than that moment when I'm just splashing around in their mind, you know, because that can be done anywhere in so many different ways. And so I find that just to be exciting and powerful and never endingly interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That came up yesterday too, at one of your brainstorming, like what are the benefits of humiliation or how can we use it? And someone said the very profound, you don't need a body.
Yeah.
For which I would say you don't need a body that has a certain capability.
Exactly. Exactly.
That actually this is all happening in the mind and it doesn't necessarily take any physical tools or physical actions.
Yes.
And so someone can like do a scene.
Right. With various physical abilities.
Yes.
And that the power, the dominance, the experience is exerted entirely in someone's mind at times. I mean, I've done whole sessions where I had one client back when I was a pro who was very large bodied and couldn't really move around to do the stuff that he really wanted to do. And so I would literally spin a tale for 2 hours and describe to him this stuff, you know, and now I'm throwing you in the trunk and you're covered in chains and nobody cares about your comfort. And we were able to have these incredibly intense, psychologically intimate experiences sitting on a couch because that's what he was capable of doing.
Mm.
And so it's an amazing thing once you are willing to adventure, I think, a little bit. People often are rightfully just a little nervous sometimes about dipping into psychological torment.
Yeah, I mean, I guess psychological play of all kinds, right? This is a form of psychological play,
right.
And some people don't want you to fuck around with their heads.
Right, and that is fully legit, right?
The
same way you can have impact play without power dynamics, mm-hmm. you can have bondage without humiliation, right? All these things.
Right.
I call it the Rubik's Cube, right? It's like the key to a great, healthy kink experience is finding the things that work for you.
Right.
And not trying to follow some twoism, something where you're like, oh, you know, good, I've put on the leather corset and I'm hitting somebody with a flogger. I'm a dominant.
Right.
You know, that certainly could be a step in the right direction. But I think the internal experience is just so much more profound.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to take a break.
Okay.
We're going to hear from our great sponsors.
Awesome.
Including Lilo and the Pleasure Chest. If you do want some toys, if you do want some tools, in addition to the tool of the mind, you can get them. Lilo.com, PleasureChest.com. Let's take a break. And coming up next, I'm going to ask Callie what she loves about erotic humiliation. And we're going to get down to more of the nitty gritty of it. So don't go anywhere.
Pleasure and the freedom of sexual expression are universal human rights, and the better they're understood, the better they're enjoyed. For over a decade, Lilo has been designing pleasure objects that allow their owners to explore their bodies and better understand exactly what makes them feel good. Lilo knows that when you explore your sensations alone, the better equipped you are to start living a healthy, more vibrant, more satisfying life in every other respect. The right Lilo product, and there are many, for every purpose and solo sensation, can help you discover what feels right over and over again. Visit Lilo.com or any good adult store today to learn more, because sometimes the greatest gift you can get is the one you give yourself.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
You know, the fact that somebody will literally sacrifice their dignity for me, my dignity is so important to me that when I see someone who is willing to sacrifice that to make me laugh, you know, or to amuse me or to be my little dancing fool, that's a magical thing. That is a gift to me.
That was another taste of Princess Callie teaching a workshop on erotic humiliation. I want to shout out to my great sponsors, Lilo and The Pleasure Chest. And remember, The Pleasure Chest has free sex ed events every week in stores in Chicago, New York, and LA. Go to pleasurechest.com to find out more. Now let's get back to the interview.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Callie about her new book, Enough to Make You Blush, Exploring Erotic Humiliation. And we're doing it here at International Ms. Leather and Ms. Boot Black 2016 in San Jose, California. We've taken a break from all the festivities, all the eye candy, all the contests, and we're hanging out in my hotel room, which is a little bit of a mess, but Callie hasn't humiliated me about it anyway. Okay, so I want to know what, like, when was the first time, like, the light bulb went off for you and you were like, this turns me on?
Yeah, well, that's, you know, I know so many kinksters who have stories from their youth about, you know, trying to get the neighborhood people to tie them up or to tie them up, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of a thing. And I have been a very assertive personality. My mom says that as soon as I learned the word no, it was basically all over. That the moment I learned that I could determine my fate and the fate of those around me, that was it. And so when I was a kid, I mean, we used to play Queen of the Army, and I played school teacher, and I would give out real homework, and they had to do homework. Like, my neighborhood friends had to do homework. And CEO, One year I got a filing cabinet for Christmas, and it was like I'd been given a pony. I was just so honestly excited. And so, you know, and then in high school, I was involved in theater and had what I called helpers, you know, people that helped me to manage the theater. But they're really, you know, looking back, there was kind of an underlying
service.
Yeah. DS sort of dynamic that I just didn't, you know. And so when I discovered the BDSM world and was suddenly given language, you know, and that I kind of joke, you know, that I discovered I wasn't a bitchy stripper. I was a dominatrix. you know, because when I was a dancer, I did bachelor parties, and I would go in and feel so empowered. And when men would be disrespectful, which inevitably, you know, they would, you know, I would make them bark like dogs, or I would put their nose in the corner. And I had no reference point of what that was. Like, I didn't know about BDSM. I'm not a kinkster that had been sneaking, you know, mm-hmm. magazines mm-hmm. and stuff. And so when I finally really realized that not only was I a dominant person, but that there were people who really truly wanted that from me and appreciated that for me. And as I looked back kind of throughout my life and then recognizing some of those things, the moment I was given language for it, I had a moment of like angels singing and rainbows going off over my head. It was like, oh my God, oh my God. I get to like blatantly just tell people what to do. Like, I don't have to, you know, tap dance around it anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've always had a very teasing personality. Not everyone appreciates my sense of humor. I will acknowledge I can be an acquired taste. You know, I can be a little caustic, but it's intended with fun. And so again, when I discovered the BDSM world and then realized that I had always kind of poked fun at my loved ones. I lived on the East Coast for mm-hmm. in Boston, where the meaner they are, the more they love you, you know? Right. And so it was kind of there wasn't any particular moment about humiliation other mm-hmm. than this kind of realization and language given, where suddenly then it was like, oh my God, all these things I've already been doing, I now understand what I have been doing. You know, when I started in the scene 15 years ago, it wasn't a topic of workshops a lot of times. Like, and so I started teaching pretty early, actually, because it just seemed to come so naturally. You know, what do I love about humiliation? I love how personal, how creative, how totally off the wall it can be, and how intimately tied people's sexual identity is to these really unexpected experiences.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's the other thing that strikes me that's clear. And you made this connection very clear in the class and in the book, is we live in a shame-based sexual culture, right? I mean, there's shame everywhere.
And as about sex, everything.
Right, and as sex educators, both you and I are like going out, talking to college kids, being like, no shame.
Yeah.
No shame. Sex positive.
Right.
Right. Healthy sexuality, pleasure.
Right.
It's all good.
Right.
But we live in a shame-based sex society, and so people actually have a lot of hang-ups about a lot of different things, and they have shame about things that you may not even know they have shame about,
yeah.
Right? So it seems like a playground.
It is a playground. I'm an efficiency slut is one of my identities, and I love to turn stuff like societal taboos, I like to turn everyday experiences into, like, you might as well get the most out of them. Like one of the people in the class yesterday said, you know, I have learned to eroticize feeling shameful about sex because I can't avoid feeling shameful about sex. It's like, so you might as well get to masturbate extra.
Yes.
Because of it.
Right.
You know, and so that's where too, you know, humiliation, they are rooted in social stuff, in misogyny, in sexism, in classism, in racism, in all of these things that create these real mental taboos for us, that then some of us just like to dabble in those things and like to put those things to use for us.
Yeah. But that's the fascinating piece of this, which of course is an extension of BDSM, which is the notion that we can never get to a place that is 100% shame-free.
Right.
So let us take the shame, wrestle with it, work it out, work it through, eroticize it, name it. Use it.
Right.
Use
it. Put it to use.
Yeah.
If your shame is a donkey, hitch a fucking wagon to it and make it carry you across the land, baby. That, I think, is at the core of what erotic humiliation is a lot of times.
Yeah.
It really is about taking these experiences that would traditionally be negative, down, bad, all of these words, experiences, and it celebrates them in a way that puts them to use that you can work through it. You know, that it's therapeutic, but not therapy.
That was a good point. You're right.
There is tragically so much mental health issues in the world. I think that the kink community tends to attract people who have had a variety of experiences, and they like to turn perhaps negative experiences into positive experiences. And I think that there's a lot of fodder for that. But that I always urge kinksters to be careful, particularly when trying to work through emotional experiences through erotic play, that it can be powerful, but that if you're not doing it with the guidance of a therapist,
right,
you want to make sure that you're not diving in the deep end, that you know, if you're going to attempt those things, attempt it incrementally to be as safe as humanly possible, because it can be an incredibly cathartic experience, but it also can go in the other way.
It can
be dangerous in the same way that bondage, if not done appropriately, you can really screw up your nerves. And you know, I know people who have lost feeling in their left arm or whatever because of bondage done in the wrong way. Or imagine that happening, but to your brain, you know. So I do urge people to be cautious. Like I said earlier, I do urge people not to do pickup play. It's not, I think, the most casual play, because even stuff that you might assume is low level. So the first femdom video I ever did, I was speaking to the female submissive that I was going to be working with, and she said, you can call me a cum dumpster, you can call me a walking whore. If you call me a slut, I will punch you in the nose. And like, I think of slut as a pretty low level term.
For you.
Right. Exactly. There is no assumptions. You cannot go into humiliation play assuming. And that's why I think casual play can be really tricky. It's not that it's impossible. It's just that it can be really, really tricky.
Yeah.
You know?
I mean, has anyone ever come to you and said, the basis of my shame is fill in the blank, and you went, huh, that is surprising?
You know, no. The human experience manifests in beautifully fucked up ways, you know, because nobody's not fucked up. They're just people who pretend better.
Right.
And so, you know, I find that that the exploration of it is something that always deserves kudos. And I'm more often than not go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Hmm. Like when I was a pro, the number of clients who would come in and say, you know, this is probably going to be the weirdest thing you've ever heard. And it's like, try me, sweetie. Like, I will almost bet you money that it's not.
Or that I've heard it before.
Right, exactly. Yeah. There were a couple, like the booger fetishists. That one caught me a little off guard. But then it was like, of course, the taboo of bodily functions
is a really big deal, right?
And so the fact that you want to suck on my, you know, cold, riddled Kleenex, why is that any different than somebody who wants to be spit on or peed on or pied in the face or tied to a tree? It's just another action,
mm-hmm.
you know, and why do people get there? Because the world is complex and we develop in relation to that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So no, I really have never, I mostly go, oh yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I get it. I get you. But I think that's also been a part of my success in helping so many people through their desires for humiliation. I mean, I am grateful for the opportunity to provide safe space for people to not be judged. Because even within the kink world, so often you are judged for this sort of thing. You know, that I have had people who have been emotionally crushed by trying to share their desire for this stuff and suddenly being told, no, God, you're just too damaged. And it's like, well,
that's too kinky.
Right.
Or, right.
You know, right. That's just too weird. Or there's no way that, you know, the potential for abuse. I mean, I teach about financial domination, which gets a super bad rap because, you know, unethical people use it.
Mm-hmm.
Unethical people use all of this, all of it. Unethical people use DS as a structure for abuse all over the place.
But I would say there are unethical people who use marriage as a structure for abuse.
Because people are unethical.
Yeah.
You know, it's not the tool. Again, you know, it's like not the activity. It's the intention. If you have the intention of being an abusive person or the unconscious intention, that's what's going to happen. Other than that, everything, no matter how superficially it might look like, it's unhealthy or you don't understand it. I have the 5 pillars. Context. It matters, you know, what the context is because it can be appropriate to humiliate someone in one situation and not in the other. Same thing with consent, right? Consent obviously is vital. Communication, talking it all through. Trust. And you'll have to read the book to get the 5th.
Oh, she's so tricky.
No, she's right, though. I worked really hard on the book.
There's a lot of great, you know, information out there.
And there's very few teachers teaching this, so you're going to get it from one of the best. Okay, so let's take another break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about Callie's other passion, which is sex education, on a much broader scale. Stay with us.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Pleasure and the freedom of sexual expression are universal human rights, and the better they're understood, the better they're enjoyed. For over a decade, Lilo has been designing pleasure objects that allow their owners to explore their bodies and better understand exactly what makes them feel good. Lilo knows that when you explore your sensations alone, the better equipped you are to start living a healthy, more vibrant, more satisfying life in every other respect. The right Lilo product, and there are many for every purpose and solo sensation, can help you discover what feels right over and over again. Visit Lilo.com or any good adult store today to learn more, because sometimes the greatest gift you can get is the one you give yourself.
Stimulating talk
gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time.
The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Oh, you want me to spank you? Okay, well, do you want me to spank you because you like the physical endorphins? Do you want me to spank you because it's a punishment? Do you want me to spank you because you like to feel small over my lap, right? So for me, it's the goal feeling that you need to talk about. Stop talking about activities, okay? Just take activities off the table for a minute. I want to know how you want to feel.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. Princess Callie packs so much useful information into her workshops. It was actually hard for me to come up with just a few clips to share with you, but I hope you liked that one. Now let's get back to our interview.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I'm talking today with Callie, who's a sex expert, and we've been talking about erotic humiliation because you have this new book. You also have a companion to the book, which is the Enough to Make You Blush Creative Humiliation Scene Starters.
That's right.
Okay, so she's presented me with this sort of deck of cards.
They're like index cards.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or like playing cards. Yeah. And they have various things in them. So I'm just going to draw one randomly, and okay, then you're going to explain what the hell's like going on.
Awesome. While you're picking, okay, I used to, because I'm very verbose in my kink, I literally never shut up when I'm playing, but that's been a real strength of mine because words are so powerful. Mm-hmm. And I used to joke that if I could bottle this verbal ability, that it would be a real help for a lot of people, because so many people really get stuck on what to say. You know, dirty talk is not something, and particularly dirty talk that is of humiliation nature, doesn't come real naturally to a lot of people. So what I did is I put together this deck of over 200 filthy phrases to call your loved one, and they're in 20 categories. They're based on the chapters of the book, and it's to give you a creative support for when you're playing. All right, so what did you pick?
Okay, so this one is under the category of teasing. Insatiable harlot, pleasure slut, troublesome tart, promiscuous pet, and petulant brat.
I like alliteration, obviously. I'm a fan of, you know, a poetic sense of wording when I'm degrading someone.
Okay, and then I picked also this one, which is under the category sexual. Captain Cum Chugger, Clam Slammer, Cock Gobbler, Whore Hole, and Splooge Sucker.
That's right. That's right. I mean, and I've designed this fun, cool deck, but I even encourage people, get a deck of index cards or playing cards or put it in your Evernote. You know, right, you can get my snazzy deck. Right. But the point is to create a bank of perverted inspiration.
Right.
Because so often I find that when you're in the middle of a scene, it can be hard to remember. And so it becomes like you slut doing slutty things.
Being a slut
all over the slut. Okay, right, whatever.
Right.
And so, you know, just having a reference point of other words to inspire you to use. A couple of the ways that I recommend people use it, sometimes they'll say, I don't even want to think of things to call you. Get the deck. So there's this great kind of humiliation, yes, that I'm literally not even going to put my creative juices to use for you.
Right.
Right. Oh, and they have to crawl and bring you the deck. Right. And you can flip through and, you know, yeah, that sort of thing.
And this one isn't even good enough for you.
This one's
not even good.
Right. Yeah. We need something, you know, harder or filthier, you know, right, whatever. And then the other one that is kind of one of my secret weapons, to be honest, is that I will give the deck of cards to the submissive and will say, pick out three cards that describe who you are today.
Oh, wow. this really taps into it. You know what I mean? This taps
into everything from
confession. Am I naughty or am I a whore?
Yes.
Right? It's a huge spectrum.
Because if somebody says, you know, I'm a horny toy, I'm a naughty puppy, I'm a fuck doll, that's very different than if somebody says, I'm a fucking maggot, I'm lower than sheep shit.
And so it's a way of getting into their head without saying, so how are you feeling today? What kind of direction should we go in? And not that that's not a legit way to communicate.
No, of course.
But I find that particularly with humiliation, it's better to do a workaround. And so doing that, one, it gets them in on the action. As the dominant, I should not be the person having to come up with every little thing. It also gets you off and running with an idea, because as a pro, there were lots of days that I wasn't particularly in the mood, but then they give me a card and I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to totally turn you into my worm today. You're, you know, so there's all these really great kind of tricks that support your experience.
Okay, so this is also kind of part of a larger project, which is Callie, the sex educator, and the creator of kinkacademy.com.
Yes.
So let's talk about what Kink Academy is.
Awesome, I'd love to. Yeah, I have a real dedication to sex education and to making it accessible for people. You know, for years I've gone to events, you know, like you, we go to these amazing events like IMSL here, but for whatever reason, there are a lot of people that can't attend events, either because geographically it's not practical, they don't feel safe, I mean, there's a lot of reasons. And so when I launched Kink Academy in 2007, the intention was twofold. One, from the very get-go, I paid educators, and so I wanted to be a company that really demonstrated the value that I feel sex education brings, because it's not always the case in the kink community. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing was that it was about making kink education and smart kink education available to anybody who wants it, not just people that can come to events. Because there are lots of kinksters that are bedroom kinksters.
Right.
But why shouldn't they get to see people like Sarah Sloan or Wintersong or Lee Harrington? Or I have 130 educators. And so the idea was and is that we provide a platform for educators to share their message. And then consumers can take their pick with the people that they connect the most to, but from the privacy of their own home and on their own schedule. So we've got 1,400 videos right now, and each video is between 5 and 10 minutes long. Many of them are an hour if you watch them all in a row. But again, the idea is that you can watch one video, learn something, put it into practice, or you can sit and watch a whole class and really get a bit more of a comprehensive experience of it. So yeah, so Kink Academy has been a real passion project for me, and I'm very proud of it. I'm deeply, deeply proud of Kink Academy, because
I
really
bootstrapped. I want all these people to know about it.
Thank you.
Because I do think that more and more and more and more people are interested in this stuff.
Definitely.
And I don't want them turning to erotic novels for instruction.
Right. And so, you know, to me, such a main goal of it was to really put these brilliant sex educators that I had known and worked with for years in the hands of people who needed the information. And pretty inexpensively. I mean, it's like $20 a month to get access to everything. You know, and so it's something that I am just really deeply proud to have built. It's hard to sometimes build financially sustainable things in the kink community. It's a community that I think struggles with people openly wanting to make a living. And it's something that I've fought against, and I think we still have a long way to go, frankly.
Absolutely.
My belief is that if we don't stimulate the kink economy, people will continue to burn out and we will continue to lose high quality resources, you know? But I believe in Kink Academy so much that I will keep it going, frankly, no matter what.
So let's take another break. I want to talk when we come back next about safety, about the flip side of the fun, basically. So stay tuned, more with Callie when we come back.
Pleasure and the freedom of sexual expression are universal human rights, and the better they're understood, the better they're enjoyed. For over a decade, Lilo has been designing pleasure objects that allow their owners to explore their bodies and better understand exactly what makes them feel good. Lilo knows that when you explore your sensations alone, the better equipped you are to start living a healthy, more vibrant, more satisfying life in every other respect. The right Lilo product, and there are many for every purpose and solo sensation, can help you discover what feels right over and over again. Visit Lilo.com or any good adult store today to learn more, because sometimes the greatest gift you can get is the one you give yourself.
Hey everyone, it's Tristan. Listen, there is nothing sexier than experience. Just ask the Pleasure Chest. As the oldest sex-positive boutique in America, this legendary establishment has made it their mission to provide sexual fulfillment to everyone, regardless of orientation, identity, or experience. With stores in New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago, as well as online, the Pleasure Chest wants to help you have the best sex of your life. Whether you're buying your first vibrator or your 10th leather flogger, you'll be assisted by a knowledgeable and friendly staff in an elegant, sex-positive environment. If you're looking to expand your sexual expertise, they offer free weekly workshops in locations nationwide where no subject is taboo or off-limits. Visit PleasureChest.com to learn more, because sex never goes out of style. You can use the coupon code Tristan at checkout and enjoy a free Pleasure Chest lube with every purchase.
Ready to take your sex life to the next level? Let Tristan Taramino's award-winning expert guide sex education series help. Each DVD is packed with honest information, explicit techniques, scorching sex scenes, authentic chemistry, and real female orgasms. Go to puckerup.com and use coupon code SEXOUTLOUD for 25% off your order.
You're tuned in to Sex Out Loud with your host, Tristan Taramino. We want to hear from you. If you have a question or comment, please send an email to Tristan@puckerup.com. That's Tristan@puckerup.com. Now back to the show.
Welcome back to Sex Out Loud. I've been having this really, really fascinating conversation with Callie here at International Ms. Leather and Ms. Boot Black in San Jose, California. So, like I said before the break, I want to talk about, you know, for lack of a better word, like the harder stuff. You know, what happens if something goes wrong? And so first, I want you to define aftercare. But then in the book, you actually say you need aftercare and something else.
Yeah.
So start with aftercare.
Okay. So aftercare tends to be the plan for after a scene, right? It's the care that is taken after a scene. Aftercare has been spoken about for many years, really kind of more focused on submissive. I've been really grateful over the last few years that more discussion about top aftercare has been happening and taking place. But I like to think of aftercare as what happens when things go right. Mm. When the scene goes essentially as planned, and so you come out on the other side and everybody is pretty happy about things.
So let me interject here.
Yeah.
But the notion is that if we go on these journeys together, we might have some feelings about it.
Right.
First of all, you might be physically exhausted
right.
from some kind of physical experience.
Yep.
We might be emotionally exhausted. You know, often aftercare also involves like a check-in the next day.
Yes, good
I
point.
Just want to see like how you're doing, because we had a thing and it was intense, and I saw that it was intense for you and it was intense for me. So let's check in.
Good clarification. Definitely. Yeah. And I will say that I do believe that humiliation play probably requires more than most aftercare in both directions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of times after a scene, I will be strutting my shit. You know, I'm like, I am powerful. I am creative. I'm amazing. I just turned that person into a worm. Wait, why do I want to turn people into worms? Oh my God, what is wrong with me? How can I do, right? So there's this real kind of natural pendulum swing that is an understandable swing and sometimes needs a little understanding.
Mm-hmm.
So the aftercare to me is what happens to kind of check in with everybody, make sure that they're okay. But the difference between aftercare and what I call a trigger plan, because a trigger plan is for when things go wrong. And aftercare is for when things go right. A trigger player is for when things go wrong. And my belief wholeheartedly is it's not if something will go wrong, it is when.
because we are complicated beings and this is complicated stuff. And even something that worked well on Monday may not work as well on Thursday. And so a trigger plan is about what do you potentially need if things go awry. And a trigger, just to define what a trigger is usually some kind of a negative word or action that triggers a feeling that is not good. That is the opposite of what we're trying to achieve, right? And so a trigger might drop you really far out of the space that you were doing. And so you really want to kind of figure out what you might need. Now, if you've never had a trigger tripped, maybe you don't know, but I'm a firm believer in front-loading effort. Take some time and sit and think, both submissives and dominants, because dominants get triggered too.
Mm-hmm.
Try to think, okay, so when I'm emotionally upset, do I need someone to sit and listen to me and not say anything at all? Do I need someone to hug me and not say anything? Do I need them to reassure me and tell me over and over that I'm a good person and I'm loved? Do I need to sit in a room and cry? Think. And of course, best laid plans and all of that, right? But at least a trigger plan allows you a jumping off point for if and when something doesn't land right during a scene.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's one of the most important things because, again, the reward for successful play is high, but it'd be silly to not say that it isn't risky stuff we're playing here. For a lot of people, that's part of the attraction. You know, my dad was a skydiver, and ran a skydiving school, and people used to say to him, who jumps out of a perfectly good airplane? And I feel like that's an accurate statement for kinky people, who lets somebody whack them with a stick for an hour? You know, but that's the thing. And so you've got to really think about what goes wrong. Like in skydiving, you spend 7 hours learning what to do if your ripcord doesn't get pulled or all these things. Mm-hmm. It's about an hour to learn what to do if everything goes smoothly.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And that may not be the most sexy, fun bit of kink play,
mm-hmm.
but if you want to have successful play, it's an important component.
So can you give me an example of a scene gone awry?
Definitely.
Okay.
Okay, so my best example of that was a man who came in for small dick humiliation. This guy had emailed me multiple times over weeks describing this fantasy. Oh, you know, I've fantasized for so long about a woman just really looking me in the eye and just telling me, you know, my manhood. And what was very specific, was very adamant. He came in, I launch in, I am very good at it. I'm a black belt of verbal humiliation, hence writing a book.
Yeah.
And so about 10 minutes in, he starts sobbing. And this was actually very early in my career, which is what taught me that I needed a trigger plan.
Mm.
Because he started sobbing and I didn't know what to do.
Well, first the question is, people do sob in scenes.
Right. I didn't ask him, oh, do you sob in a cathartic way?
Right.
Right. That's now one of my negotiation questions is do you cry? Do you want to cry? If you cry, is it a good or a bad thing?
Right.
Right. And so he's sobbing at my feet and I say, you know, what's going on? And he, I have a small penis, just sobbing, can barely get the words out. And, you know, after a couple minutes, I realize it really is not cathartic. And it has gone very wrong. And so I sit, you know, all pretenses get dropped. I sit down. We discuss how some fantasies belong in our heads. And for him, he had been able to craft these experiences in his mind. But to have a real live woman staring him in the eye, and I do, I've been called the laser beam of intensity by more than one person. When I turn it on, there's a lot coming at you. And I felt so bad because I like to play at being psychotic, not actually being psychotic. Mm-hmm. I care deeply about the people I play with. One of the reasons I'm so deliciously mean to them is because I care about them. So if that then isn't a positive thing, you know, that leaves everybody. And so, you know, again, this was literally a guy who had dreamed about it his whole fantasy sexual life.
Had been jerking off to it.
Yeah. Right. He sounded so adamant that he was going to love this. It never dawned on me.
Or him.
At the time. Or him. That it could even possibly go wrong. And so that's the thing, is that understanding that it's not somebody's fault, right? Like, I wasn't being any meaner than he had asked me to be.
Mm-hmm.
It just was experienced very differently mm-hmm. for him. And so there's so much responsibility that comes with being a dominant and a top. As a top, it can be so easy to just berate yourself and to get really down about it. I know. I mean, it was not a happy little moment for me in my career. But if you cut yourself some slack and you try to communicate with each other, I think that those are the most crucial things. Because again, it's not if, it's when. And I don't say that to scare people off.
No.
It's to say, prepare to the best of your ability and then have fun.
You were very interactive in this class. And, you know, obviously there were people who were very interested and very invested in the topic in the audience. And people just had some of the most profound things to say about their experiences.
Yeah.
You know, about experiencing humiliation as the most intimate thing they've ever done in BDSM.
Yes.
And one person said, I want to put my ego down. Yeah. And it's hard. It's a big ego. So there's only a few ways to do it.
Yeah.
To get me down to a place where I am stripped of ego or stripped of identity or made to be sort of dehumanized.
That there's liberation in that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was sort of a masterclass in that way on how we use like BDSM and other kinds of play and sex in general to kind of work through these really complicated things.
Totally.
You know?
For me, again, it comes back to this efficiency slut thing. My life, my self-awareness, my self-discipline, my self-identity has all been dramatically improved by my experience in the kink world. Dramatically. I mean, that's like I'm building a vanilla career right now, speaking to more mainstream audiences. When you gain confidence to set boundaries in the bedroom and to ask for what you need in the bedroom, one of my things I say is, you know, once you've asked your partner to call you a cum slut, asking your boss for a raise isn't really as scary anymore. You know, like there's a real power in the kind of confidence and self-awareness that kink can bring you. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, of course it can be just something that you do in your bedroom to get off.
Right.
And that's amazing. It doesn't have to go any deeper than that.
Right.
But I think a lot of kinksters who experience kink as an identity, not just a way to come, right? And again, not knocking either one, but when you can approach it that way, it has been a boon to my life in a way that when I was 22 and got involved and I was a bit of a little shit, would never have even comprehended at the kind of improvements and benefit to my life that kink has. I mean, it's why no matter what I do in my life, I will forever be an advocate for kink, because it's an incredibly powerful experience.
That's a great way to end. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Tristan.
Princess Callie is the author of the new book, Enough to Make You Blush, Exploring Erotic Humiliation, which is out now, along with her Creative Humiliation Scene Starters deck, as well as other decks that involve humiliation. And she's also got an all-day intensive workshop on erotic humiliation. And you can find out about all this and more by going to enoughtomakeyoublush.com. Callie also has a lot of other websites, kinkacademy.com, passionateyou.com, and fearlesspress.com. And you can follow her on Twitter and Instagram at princess_Callie, K-A-L-I. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible. Executive producer Karen Dana, associate producer Raymond Johnson, segment producer and editor Colton, announcer Cooper Beckett from Life on the Swing Set, Matt, my engineer, and everyone at Voice America. Tune in next Friday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, when my guest will be the legendary Joni Blank, the original founder of Good Vibrations. Until then, I'll be on Facebook.com/AskTristan, on Twitter at SexOutLoudRadio and at Tristan Taramino. Take some time to talk about sex out loud.
That's a wrap on today's show. Go to voiceamerica.com to listen to this and other episodes on demand or as podcasts. And make sure you come back next Friday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific, for Sex Out Loud with Tristan Taramino on Voice America Variety.